You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Time now to talk our state's history with our partners at the Michigan History Center.
Over there, send the word over there, that the Yanks are coming, the Yanks are coming, the drums rum coming everywhere.
This Sunday is Veterans Day. It marks the 100th anniversary of the armistice with Germany that ended the Great War, World War I. But for one group of American soldiers, the fighting did not cease on Armistice Day. They were the men of the American Expeditionary Force, North Russia. They came to be known as the Polar Bear Expedition. And these polar bears wound up fighting the Bolsheviks during the bloody chaos of the Russian Revolution. Many of these men were from Michigan. So how did this all happen? Eric Perkins is with us. He's the military history expert at the Michigan History Center. And Mike Grobel is here. He is the grandson of Corporal Clement Grobel, who was one of these Michigan polar bears. And he is also president of the Polar Bear Memorial Association. So it's great to have you both with us. I want to start with you, Eric. You've had American soldiers pouring into Europe starting in the spring of 1918 at the rate of 10,000 a day to fight Germans. So what were the military reasons for sending the polar bears to Russia?
So President Wilson was under tremendous pressure from the Allies to try to reopen the Eastern Front of the war, because when the Bolsheviks seized power in November 1917, they pretty quickly concluded a peace treaty with the Central Powers and Germany, taking Russia out of the war. And so the French and the British were really eager for Wilson to commit American troops to try to reopen that Eastern Front.
So where in Russia were the polar bears sent?
The polar bears were sent to Archangel, which is a port on the White Sea up in northern Russia. There was also some American troops actually sent to Siberia on a similar mission.
Okay. So, Mike, how many American soldiers made up the American Expeditionary Force North Russia?
Between the spring and fall and other times, it was about a total of 5,500.
And of that, how many were Michiganders?
About 90% of them.
Okay.
And about 70% of them were from the Detroit area.
And one of those soldiers was your grandfather. So tell us a little about him and how he came to be in the Polar Bears.
Well, like just about everyone else, he was drafted into the Army. He registered for the draft on June 5th, 1917, and got called up in May of 1918. And arrived on June 27th at Camp Custer near Battle Creek and received all of 3 weeks of basic training.
3 weeks of basic training. And then they were called, weren't they, from Camp Custer and sent over
They
to
were
Russia.
Sent to New York and yep. then boarded ships to Liverpool, England.
All right. So, Eric, once the Polar Bear Expedition got to North Russia, September 1918, what happened? How'd they wind up fighting the Bolsheviks? Because wasn't the original mission a little bit different?
Right. Wilson had issued orders that the troops were not supposed to be used militarily in the front lines. They were supposed to, their mission was supposed to be guarding supplies and preventing the seizure of those supplies by the Bolsheviks. But what happened was that the American ambassador in Russia, and also again, British and French officials and officers on the ground, pretty quickly committed the Michigan troops to frontline service.
And Mike, I went to your website for the Polar Bear Memorial Association. I was starting to read some of the stories of the soldiers just to get a sense of what they went through. Just one example, Private Charles Doe from Brimley, Michigan, his right leg was shot up. He was on outpost duty, so there was no surgical equipment. His leg amputated piece by piece by a jackknife and not by a doctor. Is that typical of the kind of horrendous conditions that the polar bears endured?
At the front, definitely. It was very, very minimal health care. If you survived long enough and were transported back to Archangel, you got much better care.
What about the kind of conditions, the Russian winter that these Michigan men endured?
Well, they arrived in September, and mm-hmm. winter comes quickly. So initially, they were trampling, marching through swamps. They couldn't get themselves dry because the officers wouldn't let them put campfires out. The ones that went up the Dvinia River were put onto filthy barges, taken upriver, and then deposited where the Bolsheviks were waiting for them.
And then in the depths of a Russian winter, what was that like?
Temperatures got to 50 below zero. That was cold enough that men on sentry at night would be startled. They thought they'd hear a gunshot, but it was actually tree limbs freezing and breaking off.
Not unlike what we heard in World War II through the Battle of the Bulge, when they were stuck there without winter equipment and you heard the snapping
yep.
of those tree limbs.
Mm-hmm.
Eric, here comes Armistice Day, November 11th, 1918. The war with Germany ends, but fighting did not end for the polar bears?
No, it did not. And Wilson was, again, a little bit at a loss because he wanted still to try to influence events in Russia, but he failed to provide a convincing rationale for keeping American soldiers there. Also, the trouble was, again, with the Russian winter, they were pretty much stuck. The port was not open. And when Wilson decided to finally caved into pressure from Congress and public pressure to remove the troops, they still had to wait until the spring thaw, and it wasn't until June that they actually were actually able to be evacuated.
Mike, I've got to imagine morale took quite a beating through that long, terrible winter.
Yes, it did, particularly along the riverfront. The supply lines were long. A lot of their rations were pilfered for the black market, and they had to shoot game to survive. There were several instances of near mutinies reported. Fortunately, they all did go back to the fronts. It never got as bad as some of the other mutinies like the French experienced.
How'd they get out?
In June, they were all sent north to Archangel and replaced by a group of British volunteers so that the front lines could be held. So there was an orderly replacement. The first ship left June 1st, bound for France.
And ultimately, how many casualties did the Polar Bear Expedition suffer?
As a total of about 230, more than 300 seriously wounded. The Spanish influenza hit them particularly hard in the first month of September. 60 men died from the Spanish flu. It was not a good experience for the men between the Bolsheviks fighting them on the fronts and having to survive the weather and the influenza. It was dangerous.
Were some bodies left behind in Russia?
Yes. The first group of bodies came out in 1919. 10 years later, the veterans had lobbied the state government, and a group was sent back. They recovered 86 more. 14 more came out in 1934, but we estimate that there's at least 20 bodies that have never been recovered that still lie in Russian soil.
Eric Perkins, from your perspective as a military historian, why do you think the Polar Bear Expedition and these battles against the Bolsheviks are not more widely known?
Well, I think that a lot of the reason stems in this immediate post-war period. I don't think that the Russian expedition really fit into the kind of heroic way that Americans wanted to remember the war. They were set some pretty high strategic goals. Again, President Wilson wanting to influence events in Russia, which they could not attain. And they failed to meet those goals of preventing Bolshevik takeover and sustaining democracy, protecting American loans and things like that, the investments that they'd made. And so, it really didn't fit into the heroic narrative that Americans wanted to have of saving Europe and saving France. It just didn't compete that way.
Mike, talk about Grandpa. What did he do after the war? And I'm interested in whether the family was aware of everything he'd gone through as a polar bear, or was he one of those soldiers that just stuffed it away and wouldn't talk about it?
Yeah, he put it away and never spoke of it to his sons and daughters. He returned back home to Warren Township, Michigan, when Centerline, in the middle of Warren, became a city. He was appointed the first police chief in 1936. He was active in the American Legion and the VFW, but when he would attend the Polar Bear Association reunions every other year, oftentimes my father would drive him down and leave him and go to a bar on Michigan Avenue. Later years, he kicked himself for not going in with his dad to hear the stories.
And I understand you have retraced your grandfather's steps. You've visited some of those sites in Russia. How did that feel?
It was quite an experience. I was there in the first week of August, coincidentally on the 100th anniversary of the British's arrival, which was August 2nd. I have an email friend up there who's also a military archaeologist and historian and tells the stories of the Allied intervention to people in the local region. He has a base camp at where the front lines were on the railroad front, and he has built a log cabin there and invited me to spend the night. So I was on the front lines for 2 days and one night, right where my grandfather had fought.
What'd that feel like?
Kind of unsettling, knowing all the loss of life that occurred there and all the ruins, which you can still see. They've been untouched for 100 years. Trenches are still there, barbed wire entanglements, dugouts, things like that.
That is something. So Eric, when we kind of think about contributions made by Michiganders to World War I, it's time to shed some light on the polar bears.
Yeah, absolutely. They did a tremendous job for pretty recently trained troops. They faced overwhelming odds. They were always outnumbered by the Bolshevik forces. The Bolsheviks had artillery, which made it a lot more dangerous for them. And of course, as we said, they're facing the Russian winter, and they did some amazing things to both secure Archangel and support themselves really on their own for quite a good chunk of the time.
And it's worth letting everyone know you can visit the Polar Bear Memorial and you can pay respects at the graves of some of the soldiers at the White Chapel Cemetery in Troy. And Mike, I know as part of the 100th anniversary of Armistice Day, there's some happenings this weekend honoring the polar bears.
Yes, we have what we call the 100 Years of Heroes Dinner Gala. It's at the Suburban Collection Showplace in Novi, Saturday night, the 10th of November. We will have 30 or more displays of polar bear uniforms. We tell their stories, as well as other Michigan men and women who have served in the succeeding 100 years.
And tell us your website so folks can find out all the fascinating things I did when I went to it.
It's simple. Google Polar Bear Memorial Association, and it'll come up either one or two in the listings.
Well, remembering the polar bear expedition, largely made up of Michiganders. They are soldiers who fought the Bolsheviks in northern Russia for many months after the armistice of November 11th, 1918. And we've been talking with Mike Grobel, grandson of Polar Bear Corporal Clement Grobel and president of the Polar Bear Memorial Association, and to military historian Eric Perkins with the Michigan History Center. Guys, thank you so much for being with us.